Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. Lights, camera, action! Huzzah Goes Hollywood May 17th to the 19th, 2024 at the Doubletree in Portland, Maine. Become a gladiator, defend the Little Round Top, explore dwarven mines, or command a mighty starship. Your fun is only limited by your imagination. Get tickets at huzzahcon.com. Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by Boston Brick Co. Boston Brick provides LEGO enthusiasts in Greater Boston with a vast selection of used and new LEGO sets, minifigs, Pick-A-Brick, and Build-A-Fig. Boston Brick buys used LEGO too. Visit www.bosbrick.com or call 781-627-7700. Welcome to Wargaming Recon. I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt. Today, we have our 300th episode. If you can believe it, we've been stubborn and stuck around a while, and today we're going to talk about how to run a successful convention game. So, of course, I can't be the only one talking to you about this. I have someone who has a lot of experience about how to do things correctly, unlike me, and I'm referring to the one and only Mr. Peter Saloom. Pete, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
So, I'm doing okay, but I think we should start off, first of all, by making a little announcement, because you have something cool that you've just done recently. Do you want to share that with everyone?
Sure. I would like to announce that I am an author, and I've recently published my first licensed adventure for the Savage Worlds role-playing game system, and it's called Shadows of the Sacred Hills. It is a Weird West adventure. It's delightful, and you should all look at it.
So we'll have a link in the show notes that you can go on and, pick it up. It's digital right now. This is a PDF on DriveThruVault, but you can go to wargamingrecon.com/shadows of sacred hills, and that'll bring you right to that. Just to remind you, it's an affiliate link. Doesn't cost you any extra, but we get a little bit of money from the vendor. And in case you couldn't tell, we are recording this live at TotalCon 2024. We're in the seminar room, which is beautiful, and no one seems to know where it is ever, but that's okay. It means we have nice quiet nice quiet levels usually, but we do have somewhat of an audience. And
rowdy audience this morning.
Well, yeah, because they got to keep us on our toes.
It's 10 a.m. Eastern time for people listening out there. Time to party.
Or too early o'clock for some of us. You ever find when you go to a convention that you might get all excited and think, oh, you want to do stuff early, and then early comes and you think, why did I do that to myself?
No, because I've never done that to myself.
Really?
No, I don't do the 8 o'clock time slot because it's foolish and for insane people.
I used to do the 9 o'clock one, and then finally I said, wait, I'm too old for this.
Getting to the 1 o'clock one is...
Oh, that's a challenge.
Tough enough.
Yeah.
Pretty much. So, and I'm a morning person.
I want like a noon to whatever, and then like another one that ends by 7 or 8.
Yeah, I would actually love to do like 11 to whatever, yeah, 3, and then 5 to 9.
Going to 11 is fine. Too late for me now.
So... This is just about how old and kind of lame we are at this point.
And people
we can't even stay up late enough to play a game.
Well, so that actually really goes well with what we're going to talk about, with tips and tricks and things that we've done wrong that you should avoid if you want to be successful in running a game. And one would be, you should know your limits, right? So if you're not a morning person, no matter what seems appealing, no matter if this is the only time the con can fit you in, don't run a game in the morning. And if you're not an evening person, don't run it in the evening, because you're not going to be at your best. You want to make sure that you give your players the best environment and the best experience that you can provide. And so if you're there half asleep, then that's not going to be so good for them, right?
That's true. You should just do what you're capable of doing. Don't push it. And that being said, you know, the room across the hall here, there's probably 50 people in there that got up early and set up their games for 8 o'clock, and they're doing their thing, and they're happy to be doing it. So
it's
a matter of preference.
True. I also think in a lot of these, for me, seem common sense, but as we probably know, common sense is not so common, right? You need to be prepared, have your stuff, make sure it's correct, look over it. You should know the rules, maybe.
Yeah, that's a big thing. I have seen in the past game masters for various games, like opening a book or a game, like at the table, and it seemed to me, although I was just observing, it seemed, you know, like this was the first time they were dealing with this game, mm-hmm. as well as the people who are now here to play this game with them. And that, to me, I wouldn't be able to do that. That I would be too anxious about not being able to kind of facilitate things well. But maybe it's in the game description. Maybe that is the expectation, is we just got this game. We're opening it. Nobody knows what's going on. We're going to learn it together. That, and in that case, it's fine. But mm-hmm. I would be very wary of situations where I sat at a table and the game master either started reading the rule book or, you know, was taking cellophane off of a package or something like that.
I'm not so great with the details of rules. So way back when I played Games Workshop stuff like 40K or whatever, I was the person who was always like, so what do I need to hit? What do I need to wound? So whenever I run a game, I make sure that someone in my group who's going to be there co-running the game with me, or if I'm co-running with them, that they know all that stuff. So as long as I know the broad strokes and I can try to help keep things moving, that like everyone has their own role. But if you're the only person doing it, unfortunately you have to have all the hats.
Preparation's probably the biggest topic, you know, in terms of having a successful convention game. I would like to clarify what the metrics of success are for a convention game, because I'm not 100% sure. When I think about, you know, games that I'm happy with, I guess the first rubric is, did anyone show up? You have to kind of get people to the game, right?
That is true.
It has to happen. So that all happens before the convention, or 90% before the convention.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to have a nice little blurb for your game on Tabletop Events or whatever listing, you know, service they're using to organize games. You got to be very clear in that, like set expectations of what this game is going to be, what it is not going to be. You definitely don't want to accidentally deceive someone into a game or a style of gameplay that isn't suitable for them or that they don't prefer. Examples of that would be, you know, we run RPGs all the time, and certain people might run them very crunchy and numbers driven and tactics driven, minis and maps mm-hmm. on the table, and that might be one way you would run things. And another person may run even the same adventure with none of that, and very theater of the mind, and maybe with little to no visual aid. Both of those are valid ways to do this. They're both fun ways to do it. But if it's not clear in the description when people are signing up for the game,
yeah,
they're not going to know which to expect.
No, that's right. And it's interesting, though, because, and I think this is a clear difference between us, with you having a strong history of doing role-playing games and me more miniature-based games. For minis games, a lot of times people will not sign up in advance because, unless it's a really well-popular rule system or a setting or whatever, they want to come and they want to see your stuff at the table. So they want to see, what does it look like? Is it going to catch my eye? Does it look like it's going to be fun? And so for minis, minis have to make the game visually appealing. And like, there are some exceptions. So at a thing like TotalCon, there are a lot of people who will play really, really old school minis games, like Car Wars, for example. And you can play that, and it could just literally be Matchbox cars, and that's it, on a table, and you're doing your thing, and people will have a blast because they have this nostalgia for Car Wars, right? But if it's something newer, and it doesn't have that kind of, like, just, you feel like you're back home, it has to look cool. And if it doesn't look cool, if it doesn't look like amazing, people may not play. And there, some will, but others will strictly just come and sign up. They won't pre-sign up for anything. They come and they'll look around and say, that looks fun. Can I get into that game?
Yeah, and you can notice that when you walk through the minis gaming hall there, because the production value on some of the games, you know, the energy and time that people have put into some of these terrain and scenery and buildings and vehicles and military units and stuff is very high for the most part. I just walked through there this morning and there's a Wizard of Oz thing going on in there on a giant table, and there was something that was Mario Kart themed and you know, all sorts of other things as well. I saw it must have been BattleTech or something like that with, you know, fighting mechs and stuff, and it's all like really well done.
Mm-hmm.
So I get that. I don't know if there's an equivalent to that on the RPG side of gaming. Like, people don't aren't really able to walk by a bunch of RPG tables and see a bunch of character sheets on a table and from that say, this might be good. I don't think.
No, probably not.
There's not really a way to like kind of shop that visually. There are people that are do like elaborate scenery for RPG sessions, and I have done it in the past. Mm-hmm. And so maybe that might be eye-catching to some people.
Yeah, like if there's a bunch of Dwarven Forge on the table or something.
Right. And you'll always kind of stop and look at that. But for me anyway, that hasn't been the case with RPGs. That's everything's pretty much signed up ahead of time.
For me that rings true. Just from what I've observed and people I know.
Yeah, so getting people signed up is good. That's the first step, yep. Obviously. Then you got people that are expecting something. So you've got however much time before the convention starts that you've allotted yourself to kind of prepare yourself, your materials, your storyline, whatever you want to call it, your backup plans.
Yeah, you need a practice or playtest or whatever.
Sure, yeah. I would personally advise people maybe to not run an adventure for the first time, mm-hmm. unless they're very comfortable with that type of thing.
Yeah.
At a convention, because maybe it's just me, but I would like to conduct my testing in like a safer laboratory,
yes.
than out in the wild.
Mm-hmm.
And by a safer laboratory, I mean like with players who will forgive me.
Yes.
When, you know, halfway through the adventure we're running, I realize it has broken down catastrophically or something is missing or something like that.
Yeah.
So those type of testing things, I use people I know, gaming groups that I'm like regular with, folks online, mm-hmm. that I play regularly with, that type of thing. And I don't know, I feel a little more comfortable then bringing it out to a convention where, you know, anybody that I don't know might show up and they're expecting, you know, hopefully they're expecting a good experience.
Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah.
And I think part of that, too, is that whole experience. You really need to be engaged with them. Not this. I'm a firm believer that for most games, RPGs, I think, would be exceptional, board games too, but for minis anyway, you should be able to have something that you bring in that has enough crunch to it to engage people and make it interesting, but is simple enough so that by turn two or turn three at the latest, that the players can run the game themselves, basically.
Mm-hmm.
But even with that, I think you still need to be there because you need to encourage them, you need to be able to help them out with stuff or help spot things maybe for them. And so you need to be there. You need to be involved with the game. And I've seen too often people will say, okay, I'm the GM, I'm doing whatever. And then they walk off because they see a friend or they like, oh, I'll be back. I'm going to go shop. And they don't come back for an hour, you know, and they go and they think, yeah, you're fine. You just go do it. And that sort of stuff drives me crazy because do you want to be here or do you not? Pick one. And I've seen that with players too. Like players will come. So if you're a player and you're playing the game, play the game. I've had, I can name names, which I will not do on air. And people have come, they've signed up, and they've done the games that I've run and they're here to play. And then next thing you know, they see a friend. Oh, we'll just be right back in an hour, 2 hours. Half the game is gone and you don't know if they're coming back or not. And then they come back and they're like, okay, so what do I do now? I wanted to do, hey, I'm sorry, you were gone. The rest of your team decided they're doing this. Sometimes they take it well. Sometimes they don't. Sometimes they're like, okay, I'm done. They go. And other times they're just to really get back into it. But I've seen it with game masters too. And
I've never encountered that. And I would be really confused if I encountered that.
Yeah.
I can see how possibly it could happen in miniatures like wargaming stuff maybe a little more easily than in an RPG, but I play both at conventions, and aside from the fact that people take breaks and things like that, which I get,
it's different.
You know, my expectation is we all sat down to play the game and we're all going to play the game. I mean, until either you say I don't enjoy this and I quit or it's over, but not that you're like coming in and out of the participation. That seems a little strange to me. And certainly in RPGs, you know, I do try to make sure we take frequent breaks.
Mm-hmm.
I ask, you know, regularly, do you guys want to take 5-minute break? Things like that, because it's helpful.
Yeah.
But I haven't had a situation where somebody, aside from, you know, maybe I've had a player here or there that gets a phone call and says like, hey, I'm sorry, I just have to leave or something like that.
That's understandable.
I really don't have that situation. And I wouldn't, I mean, I'm not, I don't want to say like I would kick that person out. That seems bad. But I would ask them, like, is this maybe not a good time for you to be playing this game?
And yeah.
Like, maybe you could play it again at another time
you
so that we
time.
Can keep things moving.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And
because
I mean,
there's kind of other, I guess that sort of comes down to etiquette, I think, a little. I'm not trying
hey,
to
what's
call those
that?
People rude, but yeah, I would be kind of embarrassed if I did that.
I would too.
If I saw a friend and I thought I might go walk around with them for 2 hours and that was necessary to do right
yeah.
at this time, I think I would say like, hey guys, I'm really sorry. I'm going to bow out of this game and not return.
Exactly. Yeah.
Just so they knew what to expect.
No, of course. I think that's just polite. Or it's kindness,
okay.
right? You want to be kind to one another.
That's very interesting. It reminds me of just like being able to manage different attitudes at the table. So, which is a huge part in all gaming, I think, is you just get different personalities with different expectations and different attitudes at your tables. And you have to be able to kind of, you know, as long as everybody's being kind of respectful and nice, you have to be able to kind of facilitate all those different attitude types. You're going to have the spotlight person, that, you know, the person
yes.
that, you know, is shining and they're great and everything, mm-hmm. you know, centers around them and it's okay. You know, and they're really into it and engaged. And you'll often have somebody who's on the other end of that spectrum as well and is rather introverted. Sometimes they talk very softly and it can be hard to hear them in a loud game room.
Yeah.
And you have to be able to, in my opinion, I want that quiet person to have spotlight.
Yes.
I want that outgoing, you know, really engaged person to have spotlight, and all the people that fall in the middle, I want them to have spotlight. The way I do that really is kind of just by timing in my head. Like, it's basically like a pace I have is like, I talk to somebody, I let them be, you know, they're being engaging, they're going to talk for an hour if we let them, you know, and I say, okay, great. While you're doing that, let's move over here to you, sir. And I kind of pick the person who I think needs the spotlight.
Yeah.
More.
No.
And I say, while he's doing all this, what are your reactions to this, or where are you, or how do you feel about this? And I try to draw them into that activity. And, you know, you get varied results, you know.
You kind of want to even the playing field for everyone.
Yeah, and you know, everybody's there, you know, to play the game. And if your method of enjoying it is that you sit there quite quietly and you listen and you think, and, you know, when you say stuff that matters, but you don't say really much else, that's...
Yep.
That's okay, you know, that's acceptable. And if you're there and you're going to be outlandish and, you know, overly dramatic, it's also totally fine.
Mm-hmm.
It's a silly game at the end of the day, so.
I like to do the same with minis and try to go around and be, so usually with minis it's, you know, one side's turn versus the other, or,
mm-hmm.
you know, so when it's whatever sides, I'll start with one person. Okay, what do you think you want to do? And a lot of times, thank you, HVAC, for coming on at this particular moment in time. So that was an interesting interruption from the HVAC system. Thank you, hotel. We were talking about...
I don't know.
Some things. Yeah, who knows anymore, right? Life. Or
yeah.
not.
We were talking about... You were talking about running a miniatures game and asking folks
what
they want to do with their turns.
I'm glad you're here, because otherwise I'd have no idea what I said. Which surprises people. Sometimes people listen to the show and then they come up, remember on episode blah, 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 you said this and that? No, I don't. Because that was, I don't, old me, and it's not current me, and not new me either. I'm probably 4 episodes ahead, and I have no idea what you're talking about, but please remind me, and maybe I will. And I don't mean it to be unkind, it's just, I have no idea. That, it's just, okay, did it, and gone. Unlike when you prepare for a game, you need to make sure that you remember all this stuff, and don't just let it go in one ear and out the other. I'd be like, okay, I have no idea. But with minis, when it's one team's turn, I like to go person to person. And I like to make sure that, I learned early on, if you have, say, 2 or 3 people on a side, and you're like, hey, why don't you just divide up all the forces among yourselves? It's really a crapshoot. You never know how it's going to go. So usually what I like to do is I like to have it divided up in advance, be like, here's force 1, and force 2, and force 3. Pick which one you want, and here's the general goals that you might want to do with each force, so people get an idea of what their aim is and see what's going to fit their playing style. And then I'll say, okay, Jake, what would you like to do with your force on this turn? You can do this, 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 and this. What sounds good to you? And then Jake's doing whatever, and then I go, Pete, you have this, and what would you like to do? Do you need a moment? It's okay. We'll come back to you. But I think when you're doing that, you also need to make sure that the people on the other side have something to do. Because if you're just sitting there and waiting for your turn, it's boring. You're not going to be engaged. And it can be a bad experience. And so no matter what the game is, I think you need to be either reacting to something or planning for what's going to happen next.
Yeah.
And so you may not be actively rolling dice or saying, I want to search the chest and you hope it's not a mimic or whatever, but you need to be thinking, what's going to happen next? And sometimes I find players will just, they'll be like, okay, I'll just take this as a break. I don't have to do anything. I'm just going to chill. And then when something happens to them or it's their turn, they have no idea what's going on and they hold the game up because you want to keep it going, right? Because at a convention, you only have so much time. Mm. For RPGs, it tends to be, what, 2 hour blocks or 4 hour blocks?
I'm only aware of 4 hour blocks, but there may be.
Okay.
There may be 2 hour.
Board games can vary. Minis is almost always 4 hour blocks, unless you're doing a smaller game, in which case it might be 2 hours for a skirmish thing. But as soon as you're done, the GM needs to, you need to pack up. You need to get ready because someone else has to use your table. So you have to make sure that you stick to those timelines and your game will go over if you just let people sit there and say, I don't have to do anything. Mm. But also a lot of people, they want to be involved. And if there's not something there for them to do, even when it's not their turn, then they'll fall into that. Like, okay, I don't have to do anything. I don't have any responsibility. And they might lose interest.
Yeah. So with war games, I think it is hard to avoid the fact that the other side gets a turn. You know, there's an active player and, an inactive player at times in many war games, maybe not all.
No, a lot, I would say, yeah.
And from games I've played, I know, like, in that time, I'm usually watching what the opponent is doing, you know, because I feel like it is a strategy game and half of it is
exactly
finding out what your opponent is doing. Mm-hmm. And that's okay because that's engagement. You know, you're not saying anything, you're not doing anything, you're not announcing or rolling dice, but you are saying, I see the other side is acting in this way, and that's making me think about, you know, how I'm going to proceed. It's more when you see that they've disengaged from that.
Yes.
So particularly when the phones come out, for me, is a flag that I've lost somebody.
Yep.
You know, the phone coming out for more than a, I'm checking the time and seeing what's going on. So like an extent, like scrolling, I guess, is what I would say is a flag for me that I've lost that person. And I guess at that point,
how do you get them back if you think you've lost them?
You know, I don't try too hard to get them back, because if somebody's disengaged from my game, like I see them yawning or scrolling through Facebook, and this happens for sure.
Sorry.
And
I'll do better.
I say, like, well, okay, this maybe isn't for that person, but I mean, they're still here. Either they're going to get back involved and, you know, they've kind of lost their attention span, or they've, you know, somewhat, you know, just lost interest in the game. I just give it time. I interact with the people who are engaged and I see if the person comes back around.
Okay.
Typically they do. Typically they got bored. It really wasn't a moment for their character.
Yep.
And they decided to, you know, scroll through Instagram while some other stuff happened that they didn't particularly care about. And so it doesn't happen all the time. It doesn't even happen, you know, it's pretty rare that happens. But when it does, as a game master, you certainly notice it right away because it stands out at the table. You're like,
it does.
You're like, I'm really trying to engage these people. And like these four people are in it and they're engaged and this person is not with it.
I use that as my prompt to then talk to them. In the kind of way, I don't want them to feel like a jerk, but I'll be like, so, what are you thinking? What would you like to do? Or did you notice that this was happening? And how do you think that would play out? Do you have any suggestions for your teammates or whatever? Try to see if I can get them back into it that way. And then if they're just like, eh, I'm done, then that's a different situation entirely. But I at least try to do that once around, see if I can kind of engage them somehow.
And I do that equally with everybody. There are times where I've had a player that was, I felt was disengaged, and I thought, okay, well, then this next thing, this next sort of plot twist that is going to occur, I think I might center it on them.
Okay.
To see if they have to deal with it. Like, they're going to discover this next thing rather than the character I thought might.
Yeah. Them.
And we'll see if having that spotlight gets them interested, or if that's not going to change and move the needle. If that doesn't move the needle, then you just engage with the rest of the table and you let that person engage at the level that they're comfortable with.
Yeah.
I've never had somebody just stand up and say, like, boring, and just leave the room. You know,
I don't something to like do that. That.
I would
so glad.
I don't want it to happen, but if it did happen,
it'd be epic, right?
It would be very funny, and I would respect the hell out of it.
Of course.
And
well, I mean, just think how much confidence and gusto it has to take to be like, dude, I'm out.
Well, you know, I have said this before, which is you should be comfortable. If you sit down at a game and you just had the total wrong impression of the game for a variety of reasons, right? The description is not what it was. Like, oh, I thought it was this game and it appears I was wrong. Or the content is not suitable for you for any reason that it isn't suitable for you, right?
Yep.
Or the play style is just not your thing, or you don't like that other guy sitting across the table from you. I don't know. Whatever the reason is. I think it's totally fine to be like, early in the game, be like, hey, just letting you know, mix up. This game's not for me. I'm going to take off. I don't personally, like, I guess I might feel like a little hit, you know, like, oh, somebody's leaving my game. Oh, no. But I would much rather somebody tell me early, like, I'm not going to play this game and I'm going to leave, than have them sit there disengaged and not enjoying themselves for 4 hours at my table and sucking the life out of the rest of what's going on and concerning me, you know, while I'm trying to facilitate you know, the game. I would much rather somebody be like, oh, you suck. I'd like to leave. You
know? I'm the kind of person who always thinks everything is my fault, whatever it is, right? And obviously, intellectually, I know that's not the case. But emotionally, I think someone's not having fun. I'm doing something wrong. What can I do to make it better? And if it's just not for them, yeah, I'd be wounded a little if they were like, okay, I gotta go. But I agree with you. I would rather they tell me that, but don't wait till hour three. Be like,
it's
too
late. Yeah.
I wasn't sure of the past 2 hours and 59 minutes, but now I've decided.
Yeah. A lot of people take a midway break, 2 hours in, take a 10-minute break where people eat and go to the bathroom and stuff like that. That'd be a great time to go just tell your GM, like, on the side, maybe, like, if you didn't want to sound like
you might jerk up a big table.
You might say, hey, man, you know, first 2 hours was okay. I'm not really feeling it. I think I'm going to take off. I think most GMs would be like, oh, cool. Sorry you didn't like it. Have a nice time. Yeah, see
you. You know, and for some people, even that might be hard. And I would be okay with them. One of the few times I'll say it's okay to lie. Right. So if you don't want to hurt anyone's feelings and the game's not for you, whatever, you'd be like, oh, I forgot, I have a thing, or I'm getting called away for whatever.
And I'm sure that that has happened to me. I'm certain that that's happened to me.
Has to have happened to me.
It's okay. It's whatever.
No malice at all towards anyone. But
Oh, got a call from my wife. I have to leave right away.
Something's happened. My buddy really needs me, and next thing you know, whatever.
I think a lot of this stuff is just about social skills with a group of people. So you either, you know, some people have high levels of that and some people don't. And there's a bunch of people in the middle. That goes for any game, any experience where somebody's facilitating somebody. It's not specific to convention games or anything like that, but specific to convention games, things like beyond just like being a sociable person that can sort of read the room and facilitate progress. Mm-hmm. Pacing is a huge thing in convention games because the clock is ticking. You have to be done and respect people's time because they're going to the next thing.
Yep.
And so you really need to know that the content of the game you're presenting fits in the time you've got.
Mm-hmm.
For tabletop RPGs, typically, I'm always running on a 4 hour time slot. There are some that go longer as well.
I think so, yeah.
I think that our audience member, Jake, maybe runs some that are like 5 hours or something like that.
He's shaking his head no.
No, I'm just making that up.
Yeah, okay. You are.
All right. It just seems so long when he's talking.
It must be. Jake just doesn't shut up. I mean, geez.
And so pacing is like, you really need to know, like, where are these people at? How fast does it appear they are making decisions? And where is that going to get us by the end?
Mm-hmm.
And that is the constant adjustment. I think it's the hardest thing for me in running games at conventions is you cannot let them spend 2 hours on the opening scene, and some groups of players will.
Yes, they will.
Because they're very analytical, and they're not in a rush, and they're having fun doing whatever it is that's happening in the beginning here.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not thinking about the time. They're, you know,
no.
They're just like, we'll get where we're going to get, you know, at the end. So you need to be able to say, or facilitate, okay, we're moving to scene two, we're moving to scene three, we've got to get to, you know, scene four by hour four, to be able to give you some kind of resolution. Now, it's not required. I would say, like, the players get to play their game. Mm-hmm. So if their game is we get like halfway through, we're super analytical, we're ultra thorough, and in the time allotted, we do not solve the overarching, you know, conflict of this design adventure.
Yep.
It's not really for me to say that that isn't a, you know, a successful session in their eyes.
Yeah.
It isn't in mine because, you know, you kind of just come with a preconceived notion of this is my adventure I'm running and this is how it ends and I'd like to get it to the conclusion so people know what it is.
Mm-hmm.
But that's really just your own ego if the players are having fun and doing their own thing. So, yeah, pacing is, and for most game masters that I talk to about running games, pacing is the struggle. It's the thing that is hard to get right, and it's always changing.
Well, so speaking of pacing, question for you, because this I find there's a wide variety with. As a game master, how much time do you devote to explaining the initial setup or explaining a brief overview of rules or any of that sort of stuff to the players?
The same amount of time every time.
So are we talking like 5 minutes? Are we talking 40 minutes?
My 1 o'clock game this afternoon, what will happen is I'll go down there and, you know, ahead of time and I'll set up the table. What that means is I'll get all the character sheets that are available to the players out on the table already. So when they sit down, they can start looking at what the options to play the characters are. I'll put anything else that's pertinent to the particular game I'm running that they need to see at that time out.
Okay.
I'll kind of set up my stuff, which is usually like a tablet, a GM screen, some paperwork or a PDF or something like that. So it's pretty basic stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Then 1 o'clock will roll around. Typically, you've got like your people who like to be on time. They're there 5 or 10 minutes early. They're already, they want to get first dibs on the characters.
Yep.
So they're looking through and they're asking you questions. During this time, I'm making sure that I'm taking care of introductions, right? So the first person walks in, I make sure I say, if I don't know the person, I introduce myself. I ask what their name is. I always ask, have you played Savage Worlds before, to try to get a, just a, take the temperature of like what the experience level is.
Yeah.
And then 1 o'clock rolls around. Usually in a 5-person game at 1 o'clock, I've got like 4 and I'm waiting for one more. There's always somebody coming from somewhere else that's like running behind.
Yeah.
I almost always say, hey, can we wait 5 more minutes for this person to show up? And then we'll get started. We do. That person shows up or they don't, whatever. And at that time, people have kind of picked out their characters that they want. They've squabbled with, you know, no, I want to be the fighter and you be the healer or however it's going to work. So we assign all that. I introduce myself. I have people raise their hand if they've played the system before. Usually nobody or one, you know, person raises their hand. And then I do 10 minutes on just the gist of the rule system. I don't go into, and this is how combat's going to work. And these are the movement rules and things like that. I just go into like the basic tenets of the game, things you just kind of need to know. And then everything else, I tell them we will address if and when it occurs.
Love that.
And then just stop me at any time when you're looking at your character sheet and you don't understand something that it says on there and how to do it. Just stop me and I will tell you. And that way I don't spend time explaining things that aren't going to happen.
Yep.
I do see other game masters reading rule sections, like long rule sections to players. And it depends on the game. Like I only observe that walking through the rooms. And so I don't know the game. Like maybe that's really important. But when I see them like reading through charts of rules, like in the beginning, I'm like, wow, that's going to be a lot of learning before we get started. And the clock is already ticking, right?
Mm-hmm.
So now you're 10 minutes into your session and, you know, you've introduced yourself, you said a little bit about the rules, and you're going to start talking about the actual adventure that you're playing.
Yep.
So 10 minutes in. That can go kind of as long as you need it to. I would suggest that that doesn't go longer than 5 to 10 minutes of lore dumping on people, because there's only so much that they can soak in, and then you can meter in more of that setting as you go and go into different scenes.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of the way that I do it.
I like that.
And then the game starts, you know, and whatever the game is, it starts in whatever situation these characters find themselves in. And I know sort of like I'm in Act 1 now, and it is 1:15, and by 2:15, I know they need to be in Act 2 or halfway through Act 2, and different groups act in different at different speeds. And so the clock is ticking for you to watch the pace and make sure they get, or try to help them get where they're going in a way that, you know, still feels like they're in control, they have the agency, and they're making the decisions. Yeah, and it can be tricky. So, yeah, I guess
No, that sounds really good.
I guess I'm repeating myself a little bit, but it comes down to looking at your kind of bullet points of the adventure, the time you have left, and making sure you can give them all the chances to experience the whole game, as many of those chances as you can give them.
I've been in games, obviously minis games, where the GM will spend 20 minutes going over the rules. Not in depth, but they'll be like, and then we do this, and then there's this. And I'm thinking, let's wait until we get to that.
Yeah.
And I can, it's like some games you need to have whatever, but I would say that's really few and far between. And so overall, I think just like, here's what the turn sequence is. I think you should have player aids available. You can have them printed. A lot of the companies make that available. Just have, you have there one for every person or each side or whatever, so they can see what it is. If there's charts that you need for what to hit or what, it should be there so they can refer to, so they don't need you to tell them all the time. You have that, and I think the explanation should be like, here's a scenario, this is what's happening, here are the two sides, and here's the turn sequence. We'll start off with the first turn, and, you know, team one, side one, you go, here's the first thing, and start working through. And then as questions come up, they go, and you answer the questions. But that if you spend half an hour going all over all of this, you only have 3.5 hours left.
Yeah.
For, like, who knows what's going to happen.
It comes down, again, to just setting expectations in the first place. So if I see, if you look through the roster of events for this convention, you'll see some that are labeled either in the title or very shortly in the description, learn to play.
Yeah,
right?
and that's a category.
If I see something that says learn to play in the description.
That's different.
Like, I'm like, okay, the person running this game is going to teach the whole time. It's a learn to play.
Yeah.
Like, That is my expectation. Mm-hmm. If I don't see that, or if there's mention of like experience level of players, right? I would certainly try to classify myself and see if I fell into that category, right? Mm-hmm. Like if something said like, this is the qualifying, you know, heat for the National BattleTech Championship. I made all that up. I don't know if that's a thing.
It is now.
You know, I would not sign up for that because I would say, you know, that's not my chance to learn to play.
Yeah.
You
know, I don't know this. I'm not familiar. I can't.
And so again, it just goes back to set expectations clear and early on what your game is. And very few people will be shocked, you know, if they come to your game and it says learn to play in big letters and you say, okay, everyone, we are now going to learn to play. I'm going to start with the basics. I'm going to teach you 20 minutes of the turn order and all of these things. And that's okay.
Yep.
The publishing one for 11?
No, that's about to set. We're just finishing up on... You're good.
Is that going to be live on the air?
Yeah, come over here and say something.
I'm very rude and I don't respect boundaries.
I think we got it. Yeah, but to finish that thought, it's just, you know, say it up front early.
Yep.
And people will know. And I think most people will be cool with it.
No, I think you're right. There's one last thing that I think is really, 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 really important, and it sounds super mundane, but practice good hygiene. and I don't want to like make people feel bad or whatever. It's just whatever your level of good means, just be kind to one another and yourself.
So the way I look at it is these are crowded places with a lot of people really close together sitting around for a long time. I don't know. Be aware. Be self-aware, I guess.
No, I think
that's all. That's all.
Yeah.
Just think a little bit.
Yeah, it doesn't... I don't want to make a thing out of it, but also just like, you know...
Just think small amount.
Yeah, just a little bit. Yeah. That's all. So you're going to be doing today... You have some more of your stuff coming out. You're doing Shadows of blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I'm running two more games today at 1 o'clock and at 7 p.m. And then I'm done. And it's going to be a busy, long day. My voice is already fading, so should be pretty much gone by tonight.
Yeah, and then I'm helping at 1 o'clock. It's a Star Wars Lego Battle of Hoth thing going on.
That's
going
to be cool.
Yeah, I hope it goes well. So it's all sold out, which is always a nice thing. And see how that is. If people want to keep up to date with all the things you're doing with Peachtree and everything else.
Pear Tree.
Why do I keep on saying Peach?
Wrong tree. That's a different guy.
Well, let's get rid of them.
Wrong species.
Yeah.
If they want...
Bartlett Pear or like...
I actually don't know. I tried to figure that out. So yeah, I don't have much of a good way to follow me, but I do have a Facebook page for Pear Tree Studio. It is if, I guess you just search Pear Tree Studio.
Okay.
You'll see the logo there. So feel free to follow that. Other than that, personally, I'm on Facebook, Peter Bostwick, and that's it. That's
in print-on-demand version of your adventure will be coming out in the near future, right?
Hopefully, like, next week. Like, I have the test copy with me this weekend. I have to look at it and make sure, like, pages ran the way they were supposed to run, and then I go back into DriveThruRPG and just have to click the button that says, okay, make it live, if cool. There's no changes. And, you know, sometimes there's some lag after you hit that button, I think. So
yeah.
I'm hoping it's, like, next week.
Oh, awesome. And as always, you can find us on all the things as Wargaming Recon. So I want to thank you, Pete, for taking the time to be here with us today to talk about this and share some of the things that you've done well and the very few things you have not, and the many things I've done wrong and the few things I've done right and all of that. And I want to thank everyone for taking the time to listen to this episode of the podcast. You know the drill. No matter how busy you are, no matter what's going on in your life, you know you have to keep on gaming.
Are you always on the go? Why not take Wargaming Recon with you? If you use an app like Pocket Casts, you can listen to your favorite episodes of Wargaming Recon on your mobile device. This recording is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike license. Many thanks to Andrew and Court for inspiring the show's name. Wargaming Recon is dedicated to the memory of longtime listener Andrew. I ask all listeners to join me in a moment of silence in memory of Andrew. Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. Lights, camera, action! Huzzah goes Hollywood May 17th to the 19th, 2024, at the Doubletree in Portland, Maine. Become a gladiator, defend the Little Round Top, explore dwarven mines, or command a mighty starship. Your fun is only limited by your imagination. Get tickets at huzzahcon.com.